Good morning, human beings in the inner range realm of the outer space universe that they tell us exists out there. All of us moving through space on some giant oblate spheroid, kind of shaped like a parish thing. And yeah, to all of you out there, it's early as fuck. It's Sunday morning, July the 21st, 2019. And it's officially 3:12 a.m. here in Seattle, which is wonderful. Chances are our beans is somewhere out there in the darkness in Des Moines, Washington, planting his eggs in the mouths of people. I figured something out a few weeks ago. I was asking the Lord in heaven for wisdom. I said, Lord in heaven, tell me the truth of the French bulldog. I said, God, I have a mystery before me of the French bulldog. Why does it exist? Where did it come from? What is the truth of the French bulldog? And an angel appeared and said, Dan, dude, chill. We're going to give you some facts over time. You won't get the whole message. You'll get pieces over time. Now, before I continue, I must state, to protect my everlasting soul, that this is probably some type of whimsical tale I'm telling here. But the point is, I have a whimsical tale to tell you. Anywho, the angel told me, and this truly fits into the category of apocryphal. The angel said, Dan, what is your first question? I said, Angel, how is it possible any French bulldogs exist given that they are physically incapable of reproduction, that their bodies are misshapen masses, that they are a gombus, they are a glumbus. At best, they are shaped mostly like a pumpkin, and you would simply put them in a pumpkin cannon if you're in Indiana and launch them at the pasture. Okay, that's what a French bulldog is shaped like. So they can't reproduce. And the angel said, Dan, chill, Dan, whoa. The French bulldog will creep around late at night and plant eggs in the mouths of sleeping humans. These eggs will enter through the mouth. So essentially the French bulldog, when it's young, and this is why they're vomiting all the time and eating their vomit, okay? When they're young, they instinctively know on some level this is how they reproduce, but they haven't figured it out yet. So they vomit and then they eat it and they vomit. Later as they mature, they will crawl over the human while they're asleep and using their fart gas will push the human into a deeper sleep. The human will lie there, probably in some sort of temporal lobe seizure, like a waking nightmare. They might wake up to see beans standing over them with an egg, a greasy, nasty, brownish egg slowly protruding from their mouth, from the French bulldog's mouth. That's beans, you fuck. Yeah, so anyways, the beans will essentially stand over his hosts and barf up this egg into their mouth, and the egg will crawl down into their stomach lining. And when the person dies, so you're going to live a normal life. In fact, you might even be a little healthier. Well, maybe not healthier, but you're going to have cravings, and you'll probably live a normal life. And the reality is this. When you die, when you get buried, probably after a gestation period of 1 to 2 weeks, a tiny little French bulldog will crawl out of the ground. And that is where the French bulldogs come from. So if late at night you see some French bulldog, you know, standing over you because you accidentally woke up because the French bulldog wasn't really stealthy enough, then, yeah, you know that you should take the French bulldog and push it away, rebuke it. It's a son of a bitch. It wants to plant its egg, and you know it probably won't kill you immediately or at all. But do we need more of these monstrous things on planet Earth? We already have a lot of fucking problems. Anyways, it's 3 a.m., or now it's 3:16, and the point is, Beans is out there someplace acting like a fuck. barfing up his eggs into people's mouths, and then he'll make his way back home and pretend to be a glumbus asleep on the fucking sofa. And all I can say is, Beans, your time's coming, buddy. Your time's coming. You're on borrowed fucking time, buddy. That's all I'm going to say. Okay, next topic. As you all may or may not know, Uncle Dan, your good friend, Dr. Freckles in Little Saigon, whatever you want to call me, whatever handle you prefer, whichever my alternate personalities you prefer with my borderline personality disorder, because I spend a lot of time on the border between Mexico and Canada and Dimension 25. A number of months ago, I had a tipping point in my economic life where I almost ended up homeless. And I'm not proud of this. And frankly, let's get real. I've said this before and I'll say it again, and it's really important for most Americans to understand. Being poor in the United States of America in 2019 is not the same as being poor in, I don't know, Caracas, Venezuela, or someplace in India like Chennai, or Beijing, China. The point is, being poor here versus, let's say, Mexico City, there's a big fucking difference. And so I don't pretend that being poor or financially broke or whatever you want to call it as an American is even remotely equivalent to most of the fucking planet right now. I'm also not proud of it. If you think I'm proud of it, you're a fucking idiot. If you think it's something to be proud of, to be financially broke, it's not. It's also not something to carry around like a hair shirt your whole fucking life. Well, and so things are starting to get a little normal economically for me. Like, stuff is kind of... And I'm just taking a swig of Coca-Cola here. So, I don't drink Diet Coke, but I do drink Cokes once in a while, the ones with the fucking corn syrup. I know this shit's bad for me, but... damn it, I'm working on a lot of shit, right? I'm trying to fucking eat right again, but I don't see the point. If I had kids, if I had a life, but that's a different topic. Anyways, things are starting to get more normal, and so I'm considering, quote-unquote, opening up the communications channels with my creditors again, and figuring out an arrangement for repayment, and which frankly could include just going bankrupt. I do not give a fuck about going bankrupt. The stigma does not bother me. I don't give a shit about my credit score. If you told me, Dan, you'll have a shitty credit score, let me tell you something. I went bankrupt when I was 29 years old. Not proud of it, did it. And guess what? You can do it every 7 fucking years. And thank fucking God, because the bankers, the people that run our society, they go broke, they go bankrupt. They'll screw everybody up and they get made whole. So anyways, it's one of the few ways we as ordinary little fucking plebs have a way to fight back. We're essentially being screwed by a system of debt. So yeah, I might just go bankrupt. I might do that whole credit counseling bullshit. The total amount of debt, including student loans, and I don't mind being honest about it, is probably somewhere around 100 grand. But I gotta be honest with you. The way I look at the world right now, the way I look at my life, the way I consider the reality of what I'm in, I just don't know. I went bankrupt when I was 29 on a lot of debt, and within a number of years, a very short amount of time, I had lots of credit card companies wanting me to get big credit cards so I could have lots of debt. This is the reality. You know, if somebody tells you don't go bankrupt because you're going to have a bad credit score, folks, that's a load of horse shit. And B, it's still one of the few fucking quote-unquote rights you have in this fucking country that kind of creates at least not an even playing field, but a slightly tilted playing field, so it's not so hard for you to stand up to a lot of the banker bullshit, okay? Banks are bullshit. The way they run in this country right now are total bullshit. We live under financial repression. If you're a billionaire and you conduct business activities that threaten the entire world economy, you're not going to go to jail, okay? Yeah, every once in a while, they'll take a Madoff and they'll throw it in jail, or they'll let a layman fail. a Lehman Brothers company fail. But the reality is this. In 2008, the richest and most powerful people that ever fucking lived, ever lived in the history of the world, some of the richest and most powerful people who should have fucking paid for their crimes, their financial crimes, they skated. They just didn't skate. They just didn't get away with it. They got a giant fucking check. No, excuse me. They got several giant checks and a decade of ultra-low interest rates for them. For them to use however the fuck they wanted to. If they want to take out a 0% coupon and then charge a consumer 15% for some bullshit credit card they're going to hand out to illegal immigrants, guess what? Obama was okay with that. The bankers were okay with that. So there's this part of me that wants to repay the debt because normal, you know what, guys? Normal does feel good. It, you know, this whole idea, like I even had this thought the other day that I might even start trying to date again. I don't know how that's going to fucking work out. I truly think that's a terrible idea, but I had the idea in the head. It's like, what the fuck? You know, things are feeling more normal. I'm a guy. Frankly, I get lonely like every other fucking human being, so maybe I'll try to find a girlfriend, right? But all of that could be bullshit too. I don't mean I don't feel that way. I do feel that way. But I mean this desire to want to have a girlfriend in this normal life. At this point in American history, whatever's coming next, it sure as shit is not going to be normal. We are looking at the discontinuous failure of complex systems. Whatever your political philosophy, whatever your belief system, whatever you think is the truth of the truth, if you have eyes to see and ears to hear, and you ignore your little glowing rectangle, your little ironically named device for 5 fucking minutes, you can see that shit is falling apart. And it's just a matter of fact. So yeah, I don't know about paying back these fucking debts. Do I think it's the moral thing to do? Truly, if you'd asked me 20 years ago, I would have said yes. But 20 years ago, when I was in the military, at least the first year, I still believed in honor and truth. And that somehow I was defending a free republic. I was a fucking moron. I was standing on the edge of an empire. I was a centurion standing guard on the edge of an empire. When I was deployed to Korea, that's what I was. And I don't want to romanticize it. I don't want people to say, oh, you were defending freedom. No, I wasn't. Okay, here's the one thing I will say. Is it possible that North Korea is a terribly douchey place and South Korea isn't as bad? Well, absolutely, that's probably true. You know, as I've said in the past, and before I go too far, I want to remind you, when I use the word crocodile, you can substitute the word government, but I do mean something a little deeper. But yes, you can substitute deep state and government and whatever word you use to describe the motherfucking cabal that runs your fucking life. I use the word crocodile. So yeah, you could make the argument that my crocodile is better than yours. Like, the North Korean crocodile is a real jackass and's got massive prison camps and just spends money on terrible shit like nuclear weapons when the people are starving. And the North Koreans could say, well, the dirty South Korean capitalist crocodile abuses the environment and abuses people's civil rights, and you know, do you remember when the crocodile was the military dictatorship crocodile, blah blah blah. The whole thing is that you're basically choosing between kinds of tyranny, you know, how you're going to be abused. It's like, imagine a hellish dimension where an abused woman, her only choices were between which man will abuse her. Like, she doesn't have a choice of a person, of a lover, of someone she can be with who won't abuse her. And if you need to substitute genders here because you need to deconstruct the whole thing, fuck you, I don't care. If you need the woman to be a man or to be a transgender, fuck you, I don't care. Listen to the fucking thread here. Imagine a hellish universe where a woman who had been abused her whole fucking life had her only choice to have someone is someone who is going to abuse her. And here's the thing. She also has the option of simply staying alone for all time. I gotta say, I think the woman probably chooses to stay alone because that ends up being the rational choice. And with respect to my life, with respect to the crocodiles that run the world, and, you know, paying off debt so life can be normal, so I can have normal crocodile lover conversations about what the crocodile is going to do to rebuild the roads. You know what, guys? I'm so beyond that bullshit. I know a lot of you need to believe in magical crocodiles. Some of you believe in Marxist magical crocodiles. Some of you believe in Donald J. Trump magical crocodiles. A lot of you need to believe in these things, but they really are stupid, stupid things to believe in. These are cults. These are cargo cults, almost by definition. These are cults that are geared around this belief that if you support the great leader, you're going to get something, a gimme. Here's a handout. Here's a gimme. But when I was in my 20s, I actually believed, when I stood, you know, on that ground in Korea, that I was standing to defend a free republic. I was a moron. Anyways, I don't want to talk more about this debt normality thing because it's a bit of a skein, a bit of a mix. I have a hard time disentangling my feelings towards banks from my feelings towards government. But the bottom line is this: a whole entire system of graft and greed and scams pushed the world to economic catastrophe in 2008, nearly to the brink. And that particular organization of criminals and scumbags was rewarded for it. They weren't punished, they weren't put in jail, they were written giant checks. That's how I feel about paying back my debt. It, when those fuckers start paying that back their debts, when they start going down the hole, then you can have someone call me up for the fucking car that was repossessed by the Toyota Financial Corporation. Fuck you. Okay, I overpaid for that fucking Camry. It was already falling apart 12 fucking months after I bought that piece of shit Obama car. It was way fucking overpriced. Oh, by the way, if you're getting a 0% interest loan from some fucking corporation, chances are they added 60% to the base price. Oh, did I shock you, you fuck? So, no, I don't feel guilty about this. And if you're gonna fucking say, well, Dan, isn't there some grandma at the other end? You know what? There probably is a fucking grandma who's okay about paying her fucking taxes, so we set fire to some fucking town in the middle of nowhere, someplace she'll never see, someplace she'll never live. There's probably a few grandmas there that got set on fire with white phosphorus, and she will spend no time tonight worrying about them. So yeah, if you bring me the old grandma, grandpa, retiree argument, I can deal with that one all fucking day. I don't give a fuck. That's not my problem. They believed in a lie. They believed in a cargo cult. And now you want to tell the anarchist to take responsibility for the crocodile. Fuck you. The truth is, I went bankrupt when I was 29 years old. No fucking bank, if they were ethical, if they were moral, no fucking bank would have given me a fucking loan after that. And you know what? I would have been okay with that. I would have been okay not paying interest. I would have been okay stacking bills. I would have been okay buying a used car versus buying that piece of shit Camry. That was my first. You want to hear a little bit of fun and interesting fact about your good friend Uncle Dan in Little Saigon before we switch fucking topics? The Camry that was repossessed in January of 2018, that was the only new car I've ever owned, right after my fucking divorce. Only new car I've ever owned. Yeah, there's a helicopter. I'm on the flight, so you know, if you ever hear a helicopter on the recording, I'm on the flight path for Harborview. And Harborview is I think, a level one trauma center. So anyways, when you hear a helicopter, chances are someone's having a really bad day. Because that's like that life flight thing, you know? Someone got crushed, someone got smashed, someone got into an accident, someone needs a transplant, something bad has happened, something serious is going on. Anyways. Next topic, cancer versus Ebola. Now I know that's a terrible choice, but it's kind of related to the previous topic, and it is a terrible choice, cancer versus Ebola. We have an election season beginning, Republicans versus Democrats. And I know there are many of you voters out there, even people purportedly in the Liberty Movement who support Trump. I don't know how you do. Trump's one of the biggest cronies in recent American history. Trump is as slimy as any of the other slime balls. I have no idea what's going to happen with this Epstein thing. But in my view, the fact that the Epstein thing is starting to roll out is some of the best evidence that shit's starting to unravel. And if you think that's a good sign, you don't realize these monkey fucks, these pieces of shit, these sociopathic scumbags that run your world, they still have the finger on the nuclear trigger. So anyways, I don't want to talk more about that. But listen, election season is beginning. You know, even Dr. Freckles is starting to prepare his campaign for 2020. As we all know, the year 2020 will be known as the year of the clown. The year 2020 will be known as the year of the clown. Yeah, so anyways, 2020 will be known as the year of the clown, cancer versus Ebola. If you want to know how I feel about Republicans and Democrats in voting, it's really just simply this. My entire life, up until 2016, I really wanted to find an angle, okay? An angle by which I could believe the lie. And for most of my life, this is the story. This is the narrative I had to tell myself. America was basically a good country, a free country. And then all of a sudden, after World War II, we got, you know, wealthier and more corrupt. But we can fix it and we can go back to something better. And my first stop on this false journey was the quote-unquote small government Republicans. Folks, I don't know if there is such a thing still left. Because every time I hear Trump talk about military shit, listen, you can say whatever the fuck you want to about Trump, but calling him small government is bullshit. If you are having a military parade with all kinds of military shit rolling around, you're not small government. He is an empire leader. Empire ruler. He is a ruler of an empire. He is not a small government leader. He is a ruler of an empire. He believes in spending money. He wants us to have more debt. He's told us he's the master of debt. Well, he kind of is. He's also the master of bankruptcy. And isn't that an interesting topic? So if you ask me, what is Republican versus Democrat? It is cancer versus Ebola. You're asking me to make a choice between these two options. It's kind of like the previous conversation about the woman who has a choice between all sorts of different men, but the one fact that will remain true is they will all abuse her in this hell dimension. And yet, yeah, and I think likely she say, you know what? Fuck this. I'll fucking use my imagination and my fingertips. I don't need to be abused. That's how I feel about government. That's how I feel about these elections. And frankly, Republican versus Democrat is cancer versus Ebola for me. You're asking me, which form of torture do I prefer, you know, do I prefer? And it's like, I want neither. And since I'm going to get fucked, no matter what happens, I can at least save my time by not participating in your stupid bullshit, the stupid fucking ritual that does nothing. Even if it worked, it would be a disaster, but it doesn't work. Okay? When you go into that booth, you think you're connected to something. You are connected to nothing. If no one has told you this, I'm sorry. I'm the first one to tell you. There is no Santa Claus other than the one in your imagination. And there is no democracy in America other than the one in your imagination. And if I am the first person to tell you this, I'm really sorry, but wake the fuck up. It's either too early or too late to be that fucking stupid. Anyways, I don't want to talk more about that, but that's kind of how I feel about it. Cancer versus Ebola. You want me to vote for one or the other? I don't know, man. I do not know what to tell you. Next topic. God is an anarchist. Well, before I continue too far on this, I need to say something. I am a Christian, and I am not ashamed. I am a Christian, and in fact, my Christianity and my anarchism are deeply complementary in terms of my belief system. They, in fact, there is no other political philosophy I could find that would conform to my Christianity in a more powerful way than anarchism. If you ask me, do I have a Lord that rules over me? Well, the truth is I do. It is the Lord in heaven. I have no Lord on earth that does that. They may think they do. The crocodile certainly believes it does. But listen, folks, it really doesn't. In a weird way, God is an anarchist. Because God, here's the thing. God, yes, rules the universe. But God is ruled by no one. So in that sense, God is perfectly free. In all the forms of perfection you can apply to God, you can absolutely apply this. God has perfect freedom. But then he did something amazing. He created a universe for creatures he loved, called humans. He gave them the ability to make free choices, that is free will, and he also gave us a little piece of God's wisdom. A little piece. We're not God, okay? We're never going to be God. There is no process by which, you know, whatever Ray Kurzweil bullshit beliefs you have because you read the book The Singularity and you think that Google's really cool, and you watched all the TED Talks on YouTube, whatever the fuck you want to believe, humans are not God. We will not be God. We are deceived into believing we can be God. We are deceived into thinking we'll create super technology that will make us like God. But we're not God. But here's the thing. God is absolutely free, but God gave us nearly, not equivalent, but nearly the same kind of freedom. With respect to the world, we are very powerful beings. A little bit of intelligence, a little bit of resources, a few humans, and great things are achieved. And you know what? I mean it. Like, and I'm not talking about war here. I'm not talking about blowing shit up. I'm not talking about building weapons. I'm talking about creating, you know, communities and building homes and building businesses and constructing positive, decent, free relationships with each other, solving problems cooperatively, without force, without pointing guns at each other. God is an anarchist because he wants us to behave freely on earth. Yes, it's true. God rules the universe and beyond the earth, that is true. And if you're an anarchist in the absolute universal sense and you say, you know, God rules over you, it's still a choice. That's the other thing too. I'm an anarchist and I will tell you, yeah, I guess I technically have a ruler. That's God. But that's still a fucking choice. It wasn't forced on me. In fact, society around me, the world around me, would prefer I was just a dirty, nasty atheist like I was before. And I'm kidding. If you're an atheist, you're not dirty and nasty. It's a belief system. I don't know what happens to you when you die, I'll be honest, but I'm not going to beat up on atheists. I was one most of my life. God is an anarchist. God does not want us to create systems of tyranny. And above all else, of the many things that piss off God, and God gets pissed off, folks. I'm sorry. If you go to one of those new agey Christian churches that tells you that God does not get angry, you are being deceived. And that's a nice way of putting it. If you go to a church that never mentions the devil, which is bad enough, which is most of them these days, but worse, only talks about God, the nice guy, God is love. God loves us. But God, like pretty much every parent I've ever seen, no matter how good a person they are, God gets angry. And if you don't think God gets angry, read your fucking Bible. And if you don't believe God is an anarchist, or at least if you don't believe God wants us to live without governments and kings, do yourself a fucking favor as a Christian. Read 1 Samuel chapter 8. Read it 10 fucking times. Because then you might get the fucking wisdom that's in that part of the Bible. There's a lot of wisdom in the Bible, but if you're an anarchist, or if you're a statist who thinks God wants us to be ruled by pieces of shit bureaucrats, read 1 Samuel Chapter 8. Next topic. Next topic. I'm already making everyone angry. I'm a Democrat. I'm a Republican. I don't care. You are cancer or Ebola to me. That is what you are. So this might be the last topic of this podcast. One of the things that comes up in conversations about how societies either remain stable or how they fall apart, you know, one of the things that comes up is this issue of human psychology. Like, how do humans think about the world? And here's the thing. I'll tell you this right now. Consciousness is fucking amazing, right? I mean, it's part of what's going on right here with this podcast. I have a relationship with the technology in front of me, with the room around me. I'm aware of it. I'm aware of the fact that there are noises in the streets right now, that I'm in Little Saigon, Seattle. I'm aware of that I have a history, I have a memory. My memory's not perfect. Nobody's memory is, oh, by the way, unless you're God. So consciousness is great because consciousness gives us an awareness of things that allows us to deliberate. But if everything consciousness does, and I do think this is important, is consciousness leads to model building. Now, what do I mean by model building? Model building is essentially the building of a paradigm, a way of looking at the world. And models are great because they allow us to take the chaos of information. And folks, there's nearly infinite information in our immediate environment. Model building allows us to take the chaos of information and reduce it down to things that matter. And some of this is pre-baked into our biology. To some extent, we are already pre-baked with a limited, narrow view of the world. You know, we can only see so many spectrum, you know, so much of the light spectrum. We can only hear so much of the auditory spectrum. We only live so long. We only have so much memory. So yeah, consciousness is great. Consciousness leads the model building, and models are great. But sometimes models are wrong. Now let's slightly switch topics, and then we will circle back. When I was in graduate school 20 years ago, and no, I don't have a PhD. I have a shitty master's degree in history. I don't give a fuck. I don't know. I'd almost trade that degree back to get a reduction in debt, to tell you the truth. But I have a shitty master's degree in history. And when I was in graduate school 20 years ago, thinking about getting my PhD, when I still thought there was some kind of fucking future, I read a paper. And it was a paper written by Professor Davies in 1962 called Toward a Theory of Revolution. And yeah, the paper might be a little dense for people who aren't familiar with sociological or anthropological literature or psychological literature, but it was a pretty good essay. I enjoyed it. And it kind of shook me because it was one of the simplest and most powerful explanations of why societies fall apart from a structural perspective in terms of things like civil war or revolution. Why do insurrections occur? Why do the peasants revolt? And it's very, very simple. This is essentially Davies' hypothesis or Davies' perspective. If a society is historically poor, it was poor in the past, it's poor now, and it will probably be poor tomorrow, it's probably a very stable society from a sociological standpoint, not likely to suffer from revolutions or civil wars, simply because people know their place, they know what's real, they know where they're going. If a society is historically rich, it was rich in the past, it's rich today, it'll be rich tomorrow, that too is a stable society. People know their situation. It doesn't even matter if there are poor people in that society. There will be. If they have a basic expectation that matches reality, things are fine. But if you have a society that was poor and rapidly attains wealth and then backtracks on that, even if technically the people are still better off that day than they were 20 years ago, it doesn't matter. They're Aussie rappelling. They're Australian-style rappelling. If you don't know what that is, that's rappelling down a cliff looking forward. They're Aussie-style rappelling down a cliff. Okay, folks? Down a cliff. It doesn't matter if their altitude is still technically higher than it was 10 years ago. They're staring down the cliff. That's what causes revolution. That's what causes insurrection. All the fucking white papers by the Club for Growth Freaks and the Cato Institute telling people they're better off today than they were 100 years ago. Guess what? According to Davies, that shit does not fucking matter. Because the people are staring down the other side of the cliff. Consciousness is great. Consciousness is wonderful. Model building is great, and models are useful. But models fail. And the problem with models is that when they start to fail, whether it's an animal, you know, an animal like an orca, for example, an orca whale probably has a model of the world inside of its head. And when I say orca whale, so you know, they're technically a porpoise, but we call them whales. When an orca whale has probably tremendous consciousness of its surroundings, it probably has a tremendous awareness of where it is, and it probably has a very interesting model of the world. But when that model stops matching, begins to no longer match reality, that must create a lot of psychological trauma, you know, for a whale. Like all of a sudden, for its entire life, there was healthy salmon to eat, and there was clean water to swim in. And then in the last few decades, the water became polluted and noisy, and the salmon started to die. Yeah, and then all of a sudden, your model of the world doesn't match reality. And that applies to people, too. And it doesn't matter. If you were to fucking write a white paper trying to prove to the orca that there are more orcas alive today than there were 100 years ago, the orca probably wouldn't fucking care. All it knows is its world is dying. A lot of people in places like Seattle love to mock the flyover states. Oh, of the many things I hate about working at Willy Wonka's, and of the many things I hate about fucking Seattle, it's this holier-than-thou, smug fucking attitude about how fucking civilized they are and cool they are. And by the way, I grew up in Washington State, you fuck. If you're listening out there and you're all Seattle smug, I went to school in this fucking city. I've lived here before. I had the credibility to speak on this topic. Seattle used to be a cooler place. It didn't used to be so fucking douchey. Okay, it wasn't perfect, but it sure as shit wasn't this hipster fucking dystopia. Of all the things I dread about Seattle, and this includes the persistent beating up on homeless people, because clearly it's not the fucking real estate Ponzi schemes. It's the homeless people. Of all the fucking shit I hate about living in this fucking city, and there's a lot of shit I hate, one of the things I hate the most is this fucking disdain for places other than the West Coast or the East Coast. I was at a Christmas party, and I think it was, I want to say it was 2015. No, it was 2014. I was at a Christmas party in 2014, just about a year after my divorce. And it was in one of the nice little neighborhoods of Seattle, and I was there with a relative, and it's as much as I'll say. And this woman asked me where I lived, and at the time I was living in Indianapolis in 2014. And she looked at me with her smug fucking attitude, her smug fucking, I live in a nice neighborhood of Seattle attitude, and said, Indianapolis? What's there? What's there? You see, this is the funny thing about the smug fuckheads of Seattle. They'll say shit like that. They won't think twice about the fucking crab they're eating and how much of Fukushima is in that fucking crab. They'll say smug fucking shit, and they won't think about the real estate Ponzi schemes basically pushing people into the streets. They'll say their smug fucking shit, and they won't realize that their bullshit reality is starting to crumble around them. Consciousness is great, guys. Consciousness is wonderful. Model building is great. As a species, we have used model building to go from no technology to fucking look at the shit we can do. Look at what I'm doing right now. I'm recording my voice onto a digital media that could contain thousands of hours of high-definition audio. Model building and consciousness is powerful. But when the models start to fall apart, when the models no longer match reality, that is the weakness. That is the bug. Because the problem with models is they're not perfect. And every once in a while, we find that out. And some of us have the courage to take a bad paradigm or a bad model and throw it away. I've done it. I've had to do it. I used to believe our system worked. I used to believe in the Federal Reserve. I once swore an oath to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. That model was bullshit, and I threw it away. But a lot of people, most of the people I know, especially in Seattle, oh my God, especially in this fucking city, most of the people I know here would starve to death, would die. They would die of thirst. They would not eat or sleep. They would basically suffer torture before they would give up their stupid model. If they believe something is true, if they believe some type of Marxist bullshit, some sort of statist bullshit, some sort of fucking real estate Ponzi scheme, Fannie, Freddie, upside down, perverse incentive bullshit, they will hold on to that shit until they die. Anyways, it is almost 4 a.m., and I'm trying to keep these podcasts to around 40 to 50 minutes. I hope you guys are having a great weekend. I'm trying to. I think it's important, even if I know a lot of you aren't religious, and I try to just say I'm okay with that. But if you're religious, if you're Christian, and you feel comfortable praying, I'd ask you to pray for something today. And it's going to be hard to do because some of you have models, paradigms in your head, especially in this fucking city, this upside down city. You know, before I get into this next thing, I just got to say this one last thing. Seattle is a place where you will virtually not see anybody protesting against war. You'll see one or two people. You'll see massive protests, AstroTurf protests telling you that if we don't blow up some country, some gay rights group is going to suffer. You'll see protests for that bullshit. But anti-war is virtually dead in this city. I mean, you want to talk about all the hypocrisies and all the bullshit of Seattle. The death. There used to be a strong peace movement in this fucking city. What the fuck happened to it? I'll tell you one thing. It's the paycheck. Okay? And I don't mean literally every person gets their money from the crocodile. But if you look at where money for the Washington State hipsy-dipsy successful roly-poly economy comes from, a lot of it comes from military-industrial complex, security police complex, monitoring, healthcare, all the fucking deep state big pharma bullshit. You take away that fucking tit, the DARPA tit, the DOD tit, and yeah, a lot of the Seattle economy dies, so it's not that surprising. What I'm going to ask you to do before I go is very simple. If you're Christian, and if you can just meditate on this, pray for peace. I know you may not like Muslims. Guess what? I'm not a big fan of Islam either. I'm also not a big fan of setting people's homes on fire, whom I've never met, and I don't know, and I'm not sure what the evidence is for setting their homes on fire. So, even though I don't like Islam, I'm not a big fan of blowing up their countries or their cities or their towns for bullshit reasons. So what I'm going to ask you to do, no matter what you believe about Trump or Iran or any of that crap or China or Russia, is to pray for peace. Pray for the chance that we can figure out a way through these messes without blowing each other up. I know that's, oh, damn, that's so fucking naive of you. You know, maybe it is, but I gotta tell you some shit that ain't so fucking naive. If we don't start applying our intelligence to real problems, if we don't start coming up with intelligent responses to our current situation, then you can be as, you know, realistic as you want to be as your particular reality comes crashing down around you. Your realism is surreal from my perspective. You want to talk about transitioning between realities? Try taking a bus ride from Little Saigon to Willy Wonka's each day. You get to Willy Wonka's and you've got, nutritious food and lots of beautiful people with great jobs and big soccer fields and shuttles to take you around all over the place. That's not Little Saigon, though. So anyways, I'm going to let you go, but I ask that you pray for peace. I know that that may sound weird to some of you, but if you're not religious, I ask that you meditate on peace, that you meditate on the possibility that humans can solve problems together without force, without coercion, without tossing each other in jail. I ask that you pray for peace on this Sunday morning, July the 21st, 2019.